Call a special meeting for Levant County Board of Supervisors to order. We will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First on the agenda, do we have an adoption of the agenda?
So moved.
There's a second.
Second.
All right, the motion has been made and adopted. Is that, everybody vote on it?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Chair is here too. The chair is now here, so pass the gavel back on there.
Sorry about that, folks. I tried to drive by the baseball game for a few minutes. Didn't fare well. All right. We had the county administrator's report. You don't have one, do you?
No,
I don't think so. All right, folks. Let's get down to business then. I'm going to open my book so I don't say it wrong. All righty. And we have no public comments on this one, correct?
Correct.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, the next item is tab A, FY23 CIP budget and tax rates. Mr. Dahl.
Yep. I'm Mr. Chair, members of the board. So again, we're just going to kind of go over what the board advertised for the FY23 CIP budget and tax rates. Not too long of a presentation, and then I'll have some updates after we go through the public hearing for this to give you some updates as far as budget goes. And then we also have a few speakers here regarding some questions that the board had also regarding the budget. So let me just move this here. So again, we're going to discuss the FY23-27 capital improvements plan, the FY23 operating budget, and the FY23 tax rates associated with that advertised operating budget. And remember, the board, all figures are based upon an 87 cent real estate tax rate and a 375 personal property tax rate, advertised tax rate. Since then, the board has since reduced the personal property tax rate, but this is what was advertised to the public. So just looking at the capital improvement plan and what is currently in the plan for every fiscal year. For fiscal year 23, we've got a little over 4.3 million. For fiscal year 24, we have a little over 5.6 million. Fiscal year 25, 3.2 million. Fiscal year 26, 7.4 million. And fiscal year 27, 4.1 million for a total of 24.8 million over the 5-year CIP plan. When you look at the actual overall budget, again, we're comparing what was adopted in the fiscal year 21 budget versus what is currently being proposed right now. And it's broken up into the three categories: governmental, which is basically the overall operating budget, the capital fund, and then enterprise funds, which are, you know, mainly public utilities. So as we look at the revenues and expenditures, you can see there's about an 8% increase. The largest piece of that, almost $6.8 million, is an increase from the school's budget. Remember, the schools in their current budget have a significant increase due to state and federal funding, and then some of the other pieces besides that as well. Like I said, the school increase over last year was roughly about $6 million, and some of the next larger increases. There are some decreases in functions, but public safety had a little over an $800,000 increase, which kind of equates to the $6.8 million increase. The capital fund is actually a large decrease this year, looking at the proposed budget of a little over $21 million. And just remember, I know that seems like a lot, but the board approved the $25.5 million CIP for multiple things, some school improvements, some building improvements, which we haven't started yet, and certainly a lot of vehicle replacements as well. So the change in the capital fund is almost 84% decrease from last year. And the enterprise funds have a slight increase from this year. So again, last year's total budget for fiscal year 21 was $110,600,979. The current advertised budget is $96,296,621 for an overall decrease of 12.9%. And again, as we were talking about a little before, you know, the board advertised the current real estate tax rate is 0.884 per $100 of assessed value. And we currently have in their proposed 87 cents, same for mobile homes, 0.884 and 87 cents for mobile homes. The board decreased the personal property for residential from 435 to 375. And personal property for business at 290 stays the same, and machinery and tools stays the same at $1.90. And remember, these are what is in the proposed is what is currently being advertised. And so I can go into the budget documents a little bit more if the board wants to see anything specific, but those are the kind of the overall numbers. You know, the board has the adoption of the budget, fiscal year 23 budget, next Wednesday at 7 p.m. April 20th here in the Performing Arts Center. And I'd have to answer any specific questions if the board wants to get into more specifics of the budget at this point. If not, we can go into the public.
Any questions? Okay. All right. Hearing no question from your board, we will now open up the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. State your name and your address. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Is there anyone online, Ms. Harris? I want you to know when I pulled in here and I could not find a parking space, we'll get home at 1 hour.
No one is unmuting or raising their hands.
So okay.
Little girls playing softball.
Yeah, they're on both sides, I think. Which is great, and that's where I just left the middle school. So, hearing none, I will now close the public hearing. Do we have any comments or questions from the board?
Regarding the tax rate, kind of not really. Am I missing something from sort of the county website says 2021 tax rate is 0.88. Or per hundred.
Mm-hmm.
So why would it show 2021?
Well, so last year's was 0.884. I guess
that's for the 21 tax rates. So we're on fiscal year 22, but the tax rates are for calendar year 21.
Okay. I sometimes get confused of which date it should be.
I'm betting it only goes to two numbers instead of three.
I mean, what it shows is we approved the fiscal year 22 budget, but when you're looking at the tax rates, they're really based on a calendar year. But we approved the budget tax rates for the fiscal year budget.
Okay, thank you.
Any other? And we're not doing a motion tonight, correct?
That's next week. Per code, we can't adopt the budget.
Had some presenters to speak about.
Yeah, we do. The board has some clarifications. We got Mr. Gifford here from the schools to talk about the wireless network. I know the board has some questions about CIP. Mr. Mel Sheridan's here. I know there was a request from the ARC for some funding for the ARC building, and we talked to the board about that. There was a request for $400 a month, and Mr. Sheridan can speak further about that. We also got kind of some interesting update regarding ARPA funds and use. And so
you talked about that last week a little bit. You and I talked.
Yeah.
But those are discussions post passing the budget year.
Mr. Gibbs? Yeah, it could affect the budget, but again, it doesn't have to do with the budget public hearing.
Just totally close the public hearing.
Yeah, we can close the public hearing.
I'm closing the public hearing, and now we're asking Mr. Gibbs to come up and speak.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So
the discussion was basically there's a request in for three buses, I think. We were talking about that. Where they fell and whether we'd ask the superintendent if you had to choose between the two, between the school buses and the wireless, you would choose the wireless. You know, I believe, off the top of my head, the figure for the wireless was something like $500,000 for the upgrade. Could be wrong, but it seemed like a pretty staggering number. And of course, that doesn't necessarily work.
$330 for the buses would cover it. It was $300 even, I think.
So the total cost of the wireless project as bid is $435,594.98. But this is an E-rate eligible project. And so we went through the E-rate bidding process to be eligible for E-rate funds. If eligible, we would be eligible up to 70% reimbursement of the entire project.
I see.
So that would in turn reduce the cost to $130,678.50 if we were fully reimbursed. Currently, so the bid was in March. As soon as we awarded the bid, we turned that into E-rate. E-rate is currently reviewing it, and they have until June 30th to get back to us to tell us how much they're actually going to reimburse. It's the cap, not necessarily what they're going to reimburse.
And so, I mean, I didn't have the opportunity to look at the bid. What is the bid with, I understand the E-rates, I understand how that works, but you're upgrading how many access points, and you know, what does this actually involve? Because $440,000 seems like a pretty staggering number for making a building that already has wireless in it, has more wire, you know, newer wireless in it.
So the high school is 300,000 square feet, and we have 181 access points in that building, one per classroom, as well as around the perimeter of the building, as well as the stadium complex, which is pretty large. So we have 11 outdoor access points in that figure. The bid was requesting to compare traditional wireless to cloud-based controller wireless. What I mean by that is currently we have a traditional-based wireless. We have 181 access points at the high school, and then we have this appliance called a controller that controls all of those access points and sort of the brains. The comparison was a cloud-based controller, which is going to be hosted by the manufacturer. And the trade-off is you get less features, but it's cheaper in the long run. So we had five proposals submitted. Four were met all the requirements of the bid, and the bidder was the lowest cost and also the highest value to the schools. Our wireless was purchased and installed in 2011, and the typical age of a wireless network is about 10 years, so we're past that already. The data network was also purchased and installed that same year. And so part of the reason there's an additional cost, or why this cost is inflated, is because the switches that we have Cisco chassis switches, we cannot get line cards that will support the PoE requirements, power over Ethernet, to support the access points we're looking for. We're looking for wireless 6 access points with multiple MIMO capabilities, meaning multiple data streams, end user data streams hitting that access point at the same time. And so we had to add in switches as part of that bid in order to aggregate that 181 access points and provide enough power to them. Yeah. So the wireless bill of materials is $250,705.50. We selected a Cisco Meraki wireless solution, which is a cloud-based controller solution. The Meraki MR46s is what was proposed. They are Wi-Fi 6, have four MIMO streams. They cost $844, I rounded up, per access point, and we're buying 181 of them. Well, we're buying 170 indoor, and then the outdoor is $1,295 per, plus you have to buy the outdoor antennas. And then you have to buy a licensing term. So the licensing term is $492 for a 10-year term. So we're purchasing these access points with the idea that we will have them for 10 years. And part of the
$450 per accident.
They're $492.61 per access point, whether they're indoor or outdoor.
And how many did you say that is? How many?
181. So that's $89,162.41 just for licensing and support for 10 years.
Yeah.
The in the bid, I requested for the total cost of the solution for 10 years, whether it was controller-based, on-site, or cloud-based wireless. The second, the runner-up bid, they were very similar in price as far as the bill of materials and the scope of work to install the access points, purchase and install the access points and configure them. But over the course of 10 years, the traditional wireless was another $250,000 above this cost just to afford the licenses and then the support for the additional 10 years. So the decision was very simple to make once you put that in perspective.
All right, well, that answers my questions. I don't have any other questions. You made the bid, you put it out, you went through the process. Instinctively, it seemed pretty high.
I did too when I first got the bid.
Hey, at Cisco, what can we say?
Well, it's also, there's a chip shortage, and all of these pieces of equipment rely on processor chips. COVID created a higher demand for wireless, and so there's a significant demand. There's a shortened supply, and so we have multiple things competing against us, which is raising the price, plus inflation, of course. So
if you do not get the E-rate, or if you do not get the full reimbursement in the E-rate, let's say you didn't get the E-rate, would you still proceed or not?
So we had a disclaimer in the bid that it required both Board of Supervisors funding and E-rate funding in order to proceed. Okay. So my plan was not to move forward until we had received both.
And did you set a cap on the E-rate funding that you need to receive?
E-rate does.
No, I know, but I mean, did you set a floor, like you got 50% E-rate versus?
I did not.
Okay.
But I'm anticipating somewhere between 50 and 70%, just because of our...
Best case scenario, would you say 130?
Best case scenario, where'd we go?
Get 70%, be 130.
Yeah, it would be $130,678 total. Of course, I'm asking for the Board of Supervisors to front the total cost because we have to be invoiced for all materials and labor, and then I pay that, and then I can request a reimbursement. E-rate will not pay us until they receive the invoice and see that we've cleared a check.
General fund if we have to.
Well, I mean, even for that, just thinking about that, I mean, we've done grants before that are more like, because this is, I kind of compare this almost to like a reimbursement grant or something that we get. We don't budget for the full amount. We budget for what we need, and so maybe we need to budget for thinking about this, I don't know if we budget the full amount and then budget the revenue piece, or we just budget for the 130 if that's the amount that ultimately what we're going to get. And the only problem is if we only budget the 130, then you all don't really have the expenditure authority.
Right. We're going to have to pay for the materials when they arrive, and that'll be right up front whenever they arrive. And then you'll have to pay for half of the scope of work up front. So all the bill of materials and half the scope of work is looking like what you have to pay up front. And then the other half of the scope of work is after you do your checklist and make sure everything was done properly.
You weren't able to use school ARPA funds at all for this project.
School what?
ARPA funds.
No.
So we've got the 330 allotted there for three school buses, but we're already buying 10 school buses.
Correct.
And so if we just give them the 330 and you said it was 430?
Yeah.
Can we just take 100 out of the general fund because we'll replace it when the...
Yeah, we can. A little bit of the problem is now is, so we set a max advertised budget, and that's the total dollar amount. So, we've got 330 in there now, so if we're talking another 100,000 above that,
why would we even do that? It was put as a choice. So if it costs 140, and we've allocated 330, they still have the ability to buy a bus and a half, if you would.
I'm not even talking about buses. Forget the buses. I'm thinking of transferring that money over to what we talked about doing the wireless project.
And he's saying we got to come up with $430,000 to cover the wireless project.
You probably could subtract out about $40,000. Plus, if you received a reimbursement, could you just put that back?
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm saying putting that. If we took from a general fund, then we could just put back. I mean,
Would we get reimbursement in the fiscal year?
Yes.
Okay.
The project is supposed to close by next June 15th.
They want to be.
I think that was what was in the bid.
June of 23 or June?
June of 23.
Okay.
Because lead times are kind of long right now.
So with that, I mean, if we budget, because really the net expense is going to be the 140 or whatever, so we could budget for that. And as long as we get the reimbursement in the fiscal year, then we're really...
The project's based on getting the E-rate, so
yeah.
It's going to happen one way or another, right?
Yeah. But we got to pay for it up front, so can we just write a check out of the general fund to pay for that?
Yeah. Like I said, we could certainly, because again, it's a CIP item, we could certainly write the check for it, and then once we get the reimbursement back, it lowers the net cost of it.
So if we did away with it, I really don't think we need... I don't want to have 12 buses that we all have to... They're going to come back and say, we got to replace 12 buses this year. Can you imagine how much that's going to cost in 15 years?
And we have an update for the spray ground park, too, for you.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, nothing.
Did you... Back to warranty. You said... Didn't you say a 10-year warranty?
It's a 10-year licensing term. It's not a warranty.
Okay. So, but are you paying for all that up front?
Yes.
And I thought that's what you said. And why is that again?
So if we don't, then we're going to have to if you do like a 3-year term, when the 3-year term ends, then you're going to have to go out to bid again to renew that licensing term. Well, and the cost is really small. I did a 7-year and a 10-year term, and it was less than $100 per access point. Between the two, so it made more sense to do 10. I know that the board is conscious about, you know, replacement cycles, and so I was trying to...
$49 per year per access point.
About.
Is there any reason, will they not bill it on an annual basis versus every 10 years up front?
It's just the way that the term was being done. You can do 1 year at a time, but there's no guarantee. So E-rate funds for this is called Category 2. You're issued a certain amount based on your enrollment times your student qualifying number. Ours is like $167, I think. So we have $578,000 that we currently have in this Category 2 fund. And that is going to expire, I believe, in 26. So we have sort of a finite number of when we can use it. And I don't know what's going to happen after 26. A lot of the divisions in the area that are more rural have all gone to this model and moved away from the traditional wireless.
So I think I see what you're saying now, that if we just go ahead and reduce it from 330 to 130 and pay the difference out of general fund,
We would just pay for the whole, amount, and within the fiscal year, we're
with budget.
Yeah.
What we think it's going to be.
And let me just go back to this. I mean, let me ask about the 10-year. I mean, do they require the payment up front? I mean, they wouldn't say, okay, well, we'll do a 10-year, but we'll invoice you every year because it the expense falls in the fiscal year that actually it's...
No, how it was bid is how you have to pay for it and how you're going to be invoiced. If you do it the other way, E-rate is going to be less likely to support the annual charge. You're kind of tying the material to the software license, and so E-rate will allow it. But once you start separating the two, they're really going to focus more on the hardware and less on the licensing and support.
Technical matters, but you know, Wi-Fi 6 is able to handle a lot more devices and mm-hmm. you know, current devices. So, but not being familiar with the coverage and where they are. Is the need for all 180 devices still there? Or
yes. Yeah, COVID proved that. We had to add access points just to meet the demand.
But you're currently not using Wi-Fi 6.
We have Wi-Fi 4 right now.
Wi-Fi 4, yeah. And that's my point, is, you know, did they do some analysis?
They did, yeah. We've been...
You kept with 150 instead of 180 or something like that.
And we will know for certain when we deploy. But I would estimate that just based on the building material and just the way the building is, the size of it, that we will most likely use all of them.
And I'll just tell you this much. I have no technical expertise in this. But when we were at football and we were trying to do films and download them, please make sure that the stadium areas work or have access, because we had no access in our locker room area. So one of the coaches would have to leave, go up into the school, and then load everything, and couldn't do it from there. I'd just be putting in a shameless plug.
We got you covered.
We don't want wireless access in the locker rooms.
No. Just saying.
I don't think that one. It has nowhere good to go.
Well, that's my point. That's my point.
But no, we just need to be able to do it so we can stay in supervision without having to have people leave supervision to go to do stuff like that.
Right, it's a quarter mile back to the building.
Yeah, and old people like me might have a heart attack.
Any other questions?
Any others? Thank you, Mr. Gifford. We do
appreciate
it.
Thank you very much.
Well,
and
thank you.
Yep. And then, so the board asked about Spray Ground Park as well last meeting. Mr. Spitzer, you want to come up here? We, myself, Mr. Spitzer, Mr. Hickman, and Roger Smith with Public Utilities, and then Bobby Poplis with Public Utilities all went out to kind of look at some of the water situations. So,
I was informed there's enough water source out there to make the park potable with additions of a spray pad.
Yeah.
So I'm not here to turn down the spray pad anymore. I guess if that's how to put it, I'm not sure.
Let me go back. There would need to be some improvements to the system after they looked at it. There would be something called a pressure release valve. So right now what happens is when the school's chiller gets the water, it pulls a lot of water and draws a lot of water. There's something called a PRV valve where you can put it in the line so it pulls less water and less pressure at one point. Now, after speaking with some of the public utilities folks about that, if that was installed, that would be able to allow for Spray Ground Park to be able to operate. Now, one thing we would have to do, we would have to coordinate with the schools, because we would have to see how we would have to ratchet back that pressure that they're pulling from the line to just make sure that, one, enough water is going through, but you know, not so much that other things can't be utilized as well. So to say that there's no cost, there's going to be some type of minimal cost to do some upgrades to the line work, and there's certainly going to be staff time to, you know, dig up the line and do whatever upgrades they have to do, but we're not talking hundreds of thousands or probably even, I would say, if it was 5 to 10,000.
Why isn't the school not pulling as much water when we'd be using the spray park?
Roger said, I think he wanted to turn them from like 80% to 40%.
Yes.
Percent.
Yeah.
So it would take them, their intake down half. From my understanding, there was a leak that made it pull more to the school. Mm-hmm. The leak got fixed, so it doesn't pull as much to the school.
And remember, what the chiller is more than just for just water uses. You know, if I understand correctly, I'm not a...
I think they have a wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah, wastewater treatment plant.
And
plus, I think it cools this. I think there may be a function of it helping it to cool the schools as well, too. So, and what you said is, no, they're not in session during the summer. So we think there's a solution there. And so if you remember, we were talking about there was some money in the CIP to make the sheriff's office having potable water. Public Utilities met with BDH about doing that. And it looks like it's going to be nowhere near the $50,000, probably.
That's what the sheriff said last week. He said,
yeah,
far below that.
It's going to be far below that cost. So what we would propose doing is find out what it's going to cost to do whatever upgrades to this pressure release valve along the parks, and we could transfer that $50,000 to do something there. So
we're going to do all the work. We don't have to.
I don't think anything has to be done at the sheriff's office much. I think it's just testing.
They're looking into that, and they're going to get back with us.
It
should come out and work. Mm-hmm. It should be in good shape.
To answer your question, Mrs. Booker, yeah, I think what is being proposed from speaking with Roger Smith and all them, that looks like something that they could do. So there would be a cost for supplies, and you know, there's staff time, but you know, that kind of is baked into.
Would they build the spray park themselves?
Not the spray park.
Thing we need to do is make sure we get potable water to the house and to the barn.
Well, and that's kind of
picnic area.
That is,
I don't want to get anything bad to happen to me when I'm in a dump tank.
Or we can still put it in the CIP, and obviously, if that doesn't happen, we can push it out as well.
You could, and
I just wouldn't do it.
That would be part of the process. Making the water potable, just like we did for the sheriff's office, going through the procedures that needs to make that happen.
And would there be any improvements to bringing water to some of the other areas at the same time? Like you were talking about being able to bring water to where Old Farm Day has its, you know, corral, and not Old Farm Day, but where the fair.
The pole barn.
Those areas. So would you be bringing water to those areas in this project?
It would be beneficial for our vendors, because for currently they have to bring in their own water. There's only one water source, and the carnival would take it when we have events like that they can tap off of.
Yeah, but what we're saying is going through the process of making the whole water system potable. So those areas would be potable as well. And there's a piece of it that's it's more of an administrative and permitting piece from VDH, but there may be some upgrades required, but I think the $50,000 that was originally into the sheriff's office system to become potable, if the board so chooses, could, you know, staff could come back and say, well, let's use that $50,000 or something below that amount to make the Pleasant Grove area having potable water as well, and doing the upgrades needed to facilitate doing a spray ground if the board wants to go that direction.
So if I've got the math right, we're talking 140 for the schools.
Yep.
We get 50 back, or let's say 40 back. Let's make the math easy.
Yep.
So we got the 40 back. So we're at 100. There was a request for 330, and the spray park was 220.
Yes.
So we're at 310.
Yes, 20. Yeah, 206. Yeah.
206. So we're at 306.
Yep.
I mean, that's inside the budgets that we have
it
right
is.
Now. And if it doesn't happen, then we're, when I say if it doesn't happen, if for whatever reason, you know, the spray park needs to be delayed for the potable, at least we now have set aside the funding for that. And if it happens in 2024 instead of 2023, it's going to be good.
So, will you remind me where the spray park thing came from?
Let's see. The community wanted a pool. Personally, pools are really expensive. It would cost the county $1.5 million to run a pool, probably. A spray pad, it's less money, and it's an option for people in this community to enjoy themselves with water that we currently don't have available to everybody in the community.
Describe a spray pad.
Oh, he has a picture for you.
I think liability also.
And they're all different.
Yeah.
But what I'll be proposing is like a fountain spray park. So it doesn't have it's kind of like this, where it probably won't have that tree. You know what I'm saying? It's just fountains coming out of the ground for kids right now, and then I'm going to make it so I can add to it as we go and put pieces to it. But we have to start somewhere.
But have we done any type of vetting? I mean, there's got to be data out there and people who built spray parks to say what will draw them in and whether your dynamics. I mean, you can't just ask for a McDonald's outside of Lake Monticello, because McDonald's will say, no, you don't have the dynamics that will support a McDonald's. We're not going to let you build one, no matter how much money you have. Are there studies that anybody's analyzed to say that the location of it, our population, all that will support having a spray park? I mean, I look at it and I go, it's less than 10 minutes down the road, call it 5 minutes down the road from Lake Monticello.
Okay.
The massive Fluvanna's, and you might know all this instinctively because you're in the business of taking care of us. But I look at it and I go, we're 5 minutes down the road from Lake Monticello, Lake Monticello, with five beaches. The mass of Fluvanna's kids live at Lake Monticello. And it's not being built on the other side of the county. It's being built just down from Lake Monticello. So if I was an investor, I'd look at it and go, am I gonna get much bang for my buck when I own this business? Understanding it's not. In a market where they already have 10 miles of water frontage in boats and a pool and five beaches.
My one thing I'd say about that, Chris, is 35%, not even that much, 30% of the county is able to utilize that.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, you're talking about putting it somewhere else.
Are many families going to travel from Bremo?
How many people do y'all have?
Those types of areas to go over and stand under some little spray things.
Right. How crowded is the playground area?
Well, at soccer right now, we have 370 kids on every Saturday.
That's true.
Right now.
To me, that's different.
They're going to go over there. Their sister and brother's going to go over there while they're playing soccer. Yeah. We had baseball, softball at the top of the hill, their brothers and sisters. I mean, we had people that have kids under the age of 4 that can't swim, but they can enjoy a splash pad because they will not drown in this.
My 3 and a half.
They could go out there.
Over here with you all to practice. And baseball, because all the little kids, they bring them.
Yes.
And they'll go over there and have a good time.
That's why I asked, because I hadn't thought of that. I don't see it as a destination for a lot of the county, but I see it as once you're already there, what will you do?
If it's hot, it might be a destination for some people.
I feel my job is to improve the goal we have, the goal of the gym we have in the park, and people want it stuff where they can get wet, and this county can't afford it full, in my opinion. So this is the best way to go. And in Northern Virginia, they are conquering their pools and putting splash pads in. People from here go to Charlottesville to go to their splash parks.
I'll say this one thing. When you talk about the kids outside of Lake Monticello, I mean, they're swimming. If you go by Palmyra every day in the summertime, you're going to see 30 people down there swimming in the river. They've got the splash park to go to, especially the little ones. They're going to probably choose the splash park. It's going to be,
you would be amazed.
Cleaner water, and it's going to be safer because, you know, we all know the river's got sticks and everything else in there.
But you would be amazed at the Lake Monticello stickers that come in our park every day. The stickers that you get in to Lake Monticello, you should see just the barcodes that come through our park every day.
A couple of things. One is part of the objective is to continue to add amenities to Pleasant Grove so that it is a destination point for not just our community, but for other communities as well, too. On my two streets, there's probably about 35 houses. I think we probably have less than 3 kids that are under the age of 10. So demographically speaking, while you might have a large percent of the population living at the lake, I would say that it is underrepresented by kids for the most part.
Lake Monticello is underrepresented
because
by kids?
Because remember, you've got a lot of retirees living at the lake. I'm actually one of the young families.
These are good for special needs kids too, that can't get in a pool. Think about it. And then you have a kid in like a wheelchair that can't get in a pool. They can go get under a spray pad and have fun with their friends where they couldn't get in a pool and do the same thing.
And then the third point is Lake Monticello is still private. And part of their complaints about, which we just saw when we had another subdivision, is they feel that they have other people trespassing onto their properties to use their amenities. So, you know, they're not encouraging people from outside the lake to come in and use their amenities.
We have to give a list.
Discouraging.
When we do our back classes.
I can't go in there to pick kids up unless their parent calls me in.
No, we have to get their main data list when we do our kayak classes for any kid to come in to the lake outside of the lake.
But if we really want to include other kids from the county, we get the community to help transport them there. I don't know very many churches on my side that does not have a bus. So we need to encourage the people to bring the children over during the summertime.
I'm sure he'll probably have events of some type.
I think we're having 4 field trips this month, from 2nd to 6th graders coming over. I mean, we have Earth Day, then we're giving tours. My people giving tours of the park this month to 6th grade people. They're coming over. They're there. People are there all the time. They will be used. I promise you.
Eric, can you scroll? I guess there's maybe another photo.
Where's the
There's others.
Is there another photo?
I don't know. Maybe there's just one for that one.
It was just the one photo.
Because I wanted to show you like a basic one, because I'm not trying to add like a frog that shoots water out of its mouth right now. You know what I'm saying? Something like that. I'm not. But that's what kids want. But right now, we got to start somewhere, though. You know what I'm saying?
You don't have the big giant barrel we can fill up.
No, that's like a pool. That's like a pool. That's not a splash pad. But you can have other stuff. But you got to start somewhere. And when I was trying to do this project, I wasn't getting money from the board to do projects. So I don't know. I had to start somewhere, and I wanted to start small. And I can build on it.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of pushing the buses off for another year if we get this in place. So that's my personal opinion.
Me too.
Well, Seeger?
Yes, I agree. And I think the shrimp park, the most important thing right now is to have potable water there.
Oh, we won't start anything until I know that everything is potable in the park.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah, I mean, again, if the board decides they want to put this in there, you know, again, this wouldn't be available until July 1. And in that time, we'll be working with public utilities to figure out, to hone in on the water situation a little closer with one, you know, finishing the sheriff's office getting to be potable, which I think is going to be pretty soon from what I understand. And then that additional 50 that's out there for that original project, we'll bring something back to the board once we get a truer idea of the cost to move forward with kind of.
And I'm not so sure it's a bad idea or not a bad idea to go ahead and see if we can locate that well we talked about.
We did.
We walked Monday. You walked.
No, I'm talking about the one behind the pole barn.
Oh, I can tell you. They didn't do a well. No, they didn't clear.
That's where you said that they said there would be
you could
possibility put, yes. of putting one.
I can show you that spot.
Yeah.
Water's going to be very bad.
You're going to have to pump it uphill from there. That's the issue from down there.
Well, that's what I said before. That's why I talked about that other well.
But yeah, I could show you that spot whenever you want to go for a hike.
Yeah, we went and looked at the well behind the parking lot, and it's got water coming.
It's actually behind the ball field, really.
Yeah. Softball.
Yeah, it's way in the back.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to figure out a way we can utilize that. I know that we've had issues with the irrigation system having a water supply. Possibly you could pump that up to those ponds to have a continuous supply for the schools to have irrigation.
Yeah, and then Mr. Roger Smith also had a good idea too, which would be potentially putting in some type of tank as well. And I don't remember where he said put the tank, and I think he even said we potentially have a tank.
So yeah, we have old gas tanks, big gas tank, diesel. One was a water tank.
He was talking about a water.
One was a water where they used to store tank. Underground water tanks underground.
Yeah,
we have 2 of those.
Yeah,
and he was talking about using that.
The chiller effect when.
Yeah, I mean you could fill the tank
to have a backup to where we have storage. When that goes to where we can still have potable water coming out. But yeah, no, we're not putting diesel in the water. Sorry. I guess I should
let you drink that.
I will.
I mean, I'll make a spray.
If I'm going to put it in the ground, I'll drink it, I guess.
Light a minute.
Well, we just like Detroit, you know? You can light your water on fire.
Could be worse things in the world, maybe.
Mr. Fairchild, what do you think?
Do you know of any rural spray parks?
I have one in my house.
I don't know rural spray parks, but
that's specifically rural because when we think of it, like you think of Charlottesville, there is a community around that. That it's a very different thing than what we're talking about. It's Gooseland or Cumberland or Buckingham or anything.
What's your point, Chris?
Yeah, most
tell
of
me your bottom line.
I don't see people going to it. I see people that are already there making use.
And is that okay? Isn't that all right? as long as you have people there. I mean, you know, if you really want to go out and make sure that the people that you're talking about that may not be there, then you're going to have to get your van and go around and pick them up and bring them there.
But I promise you, people in this community go to Charlottesville to go to their spray pads. I know they do. They talk to me about
it. I just want to answer the question.
Yeah.
It comes to a percentage of people that will make use. So if it's 2% or 5% or 10%, so it's a small, it's a good crowd of people. You know, I've been there many, many weekends at Pleasant Grove with youth sports and so on. It's how much bang do you get for your buck? And one of the things that Aaron said was about how many pools are switching to spray parks. Well, then I start thinking about rural versus city. That example was offered up. And there's not a lot of pools in rural environments, in part because I don't know that the participation would be there. Back to the water park.
Green County's building a pool.
Louisa has a pool. Goochland has a pool.
A community, yes. County pool?
Or a pool for the community, a community pool.
Yeah. Albemarle County has a spray park out in Esmont.
Okay.
They got one.
Yeah, that's rural.
I'm just betting, I'm not saying I'm against it at all. Mm. I'm betting.
No, those are fair questions.
I'm betting who's going to come to it and how much it's going to be used, and I don't want it to be something that...
You're going
to
have your population, it's like a playground. Nobody over the age of 12 is supposed to use a playground. So why don't we put a playground in if all your kids up to 12 would use it? You're going to have a population for kind of everything you put out there. Not everybody's going to use our trail. You've got to put, to me, I've got to put something in my in our park for everybody in this community to be able to use.
It's about making Pleasant Grove a destination place because it has a variety of
You can go up there and play a soccer game and then you go cool off. I mean, I'm sitting here in my mind picturing Major Wells running through the trails down there, and all of a sudden he goes, okay, I'm going to go cool off. He takes off his radio home and then runs under the spray park.
I think it'll be mostly people who are there. I don't think it's going to be that much of a
business. The dog park probably doesn't have a, but I saw 10 or 15 people standing in there the other day.
Oh, the dog park's used all the time.
Yeah, that is. That's really used.
Okay, well,
we should start charging that much.
If the dog park is used that much, I'll guarantee you the spray park.
And those people come from Lake Monticello. I'm going to tell you, the people who use the dog park, they could have a fence in their backyard, but they don't. They come out of Lake Monticello to the dog park every day to use the dog park.
And go kite flying down there and do things like that.
The other point I'll make is, and I'm sitting there looking at him. I'm looking out there at Mel. Mel's got a pool, and the entire community, or not only the entire community, but a lot of people end up, and if he's not at home, you know, they don't go there. But it becomes a liability for the private homeowners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're not talking about John boats. Leave that out of it. But that's what I'm saying. I think more people will use it than you think. It may not be 20% of the population, but you're going to have some people from Kent Store, you're going to have some people from Fort Union that are going to drive over there because the parent can sit there and do whatever they have to do on their iPad while the kid runs around. Heck, I've had a ball down there. Disney used to have one, downtown Disney. I'd run around that little thing. Yeah, it's not going to get me this time. And that was as an adult.
So any idea what the park down there at Pleasant Grove, what did that cost? Anybody have a clue?
$1 million, right?
The playground? No, yeah. The playground.
The playground.
Oh, I have no idea. That was
$100,000.
I'm trying to get a playground right now. I think I put in for like $110,000, and I'm trying to get a grant for the other half that I can't find yet because we have some proper money to get a handicapped playground. But I'm trying to find a grant for the other half.
Well,
that was $110,000.
How much for the splash?
They can put 220.
Yep, 206.9.
Something. I'm not quite sure. Exactly.
Okay.
And the longer it goes, the more expensive it's going to be, and that's how it goes. So.
All right. Well. So, Miss Egan. Thank you.
Thank y'all. I appreciate it.
What do you think about that? Oh, you have a question for me?
Yeah. How much thank would you. The spray park cost?
220 is what you estimate.
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't know that we didn't have potable water till last week. I was horrified that We've been going this long. Uh-oh, is that an emergency?
Might be.
Brush fire, water creek.
What was that in my house?
Been there, done that. I'm not saying it'll work, man.
Okay.
All right, well, we got 130, and it's not 140, I think Josh said it was 130, was what was gonna be left over. So you're looking at 130, so you're looking at 200,000 that comes off of that CIP jump.
Yeah, so right now we've got 330 on the buses.
Make that 130 and stick 200 on the playground. And
make the technology 130?
Yeah. And then stick the 200 on the playground.
And we still got the water left over from the sheriff's office project to make sure we could get the stuff done for the potable water to make sure we got, that's got to be done. Because that's something bad waiting to happen if we don't do that.
Well, did you have to stick that 200,000?
The sheriff has 50,000 to get the water to the sheriff's office.
Yeah,
it's only
going to
cost them.
All
right.
Oh, I just.
Hey, guys, wait a second. Miss Eager asked a question of me. Just so we don't walk over each other all the time. It's going to be less than probably 10,000 to do that. So we'll have 40,000 left that we can do the portable water project up at the Pleasant Grove. Make sure we get usable water everywhere, okay? And then the 330 for the school buses, they said they'd rather have the wireless project, which is 130. That'll become 130. We have $200 left over in our hand, so we can do that for the spring park.
200,000.
200,000. Wireless.
Yeah,
it's
going to
cost more than 130.
He may not get that grant. He may not, and if he doesn't, then I guess it's going to be, we'll come out of the general fund.
No, he's already said if they don't get the grant, they're not going to proceed with the project.
Yeah, the
but we don't know if he's going to get 70%. They might say 50%.
Yeah, right.
But if it's 50%, then we got to come up with $50,000 from the general fund to finish it off.
Right.
To finish off the.
Wireless. Whatever that difference would be, we're hopeful if we get to 70%. Mm-hmm. If we get 60 or 50, then we make a difference.
I mean, that's all well within contingency. We haven't touched our contingency, really.
Nope.
And we put in 150 in for the contingency extra.
I'm sorry, one more extra.
All right.
So, yeah, I understand what you said, Mr. O'Brien, about the 200, so the one-third, so it's, yeah. It equals the 330.
Really?
Mr. Spitzer, the 200 with that, it's not 206, but.
I'll use what I got.
Yeah. I mean, if we have to come up with a difference of 6,000,
I think
we can find that.
Yeah.
In general fund.
And or local community groups would probably be interested in supporting it as well, too.
Mr. Sheriff? Sure,
project with people.
Yeah.
Would you like to come up and talk quick to ARC Hall real quick?
Yes,
they had some questions about that.
Really, that is one other subject, too, that I think y'all would be interested in. Yeah, I was talking to Mr. Dahl. Thank y'all for letting me come and say hello tonight. Forgive me, it's just they got a brush fire in 10 stores. So, 2:30 is responding. We'll know something in a second. I apologize, it's going to go off. It's just the way our fire rescue works. ARC Hall.
Excuse me, Melvin.
Yes, ma'am.
You gave us the MOU last week. I didn't bring it. I don't have it.
I can pull it up.
That's
for
okay.
You.
I don't have it either.
You're not going to use the MOU.
No,
okay.
Ma'am. I'm just going to talk about some very basic facts.
Yeah, talk about grass cutting.
Yes, thank you. The ARC Hall, y'all are all familiar with it. I won't belabor that. There are three points I was going to make. I'll try to be one point. One, we've had more usage. It's actually been used more than we had anticipated by particularly our seniors and our registrar in particular for all the different primaries and elections. And I think, frankly, the third point I wanted to make, really, let me set it back up. Point number two is while we've had increased usage, we've had a loss in our major revenue source. Nothing we can do about it. It's just one of the things that has provided us with the majority of our working budget was that we had a paving company that was located out of Scottsdale that stored their gravel there when they did some, you know, the roads in the summertime, paving. Worked great for almost 25 years. they'd store their gravel at the community center, and then as the summer went by, and they went out and paved roads, and they paid us to let us, you know, store it there. So that was enough revenue, frankly, to get by. It wasn't everything we'd liked it to be, but it was enough that we could keep the lights on. So in a nutshell, they've been sold, and the larger company that bought them out of Richmond no longer uses. They don't store gravel locally. They have bigger facilities in the Richmond area, frankly, I believe. So, and then thirdly, I guess the point I really want to make, particularly if you refresh your memory, I think the ARC Hall has been a very good steward of the monies that we have received. We have not only received some money from the Board of Supervisors, which was greatly appreciated. We have received a, you know, a grant, you know, through the chamber, and that's been very helpful. I'd refresh some of y'all's memory, if you aren't familiar with it, some of you are new to the board. I don't know, about 4 years ago, we had county engineer come out and help us with some absolutely necessary repairs. Estimate was $91,000 to repair the roof, replace the kitchen, which needed badly to be updated, and upgrade the electrical. We felt we could get it done for less than that. Asked the county for $30,000, the county agreed to that. We used every penny of it, but we got everything on that punch list done. So we're pretty proud that we got it all done for the $30,000 we had. But that brings us to current times. Our senior citizens use it now at least twice a month. I'd be happy for them to use it 10 times a month. There's several other small gatherings, you know, there's yoga class, there's community events, and of course it's leased out at an almost bare minimum cost to the community. We just had a memorial service this past weekend for a funeral that was going to be a very large family looking for a place. So that's, I guess, it in a nutshell. We have enough money in our budget annually to pay our insurance, which has gone up, but we have to have liability insurance. We have to have, you know, property insurance, and we could not operate otherwise. And we are able to pay our electric bill. What we have never been able to pay is just basic maintenance for grass and landscaping. We've had a couple of neighbors that have been, well, we have four people on the board that come up there and cut the grass. I mean, it gets so bad in the summertime, I had a bush hog it last year twice. So we would like to ask the board if it would consider allowing us to have a small working budget of $400 a month. If you can't do $400, we'll make it work for less. But right now, what I would do with that is I would use it to pay for grass maintenance 8 months of the year, and use the other 4 months to do absolutely necessary repair that we know it's coming, and that's replacing the handicap ramp. We've teamed up with Flivana Housing Foundation and asked them to give us their recommendation on replacing the handicap ramp. It's a 1950s building. It's built, 4 foot above grade. And so, you know, to go in the building, if you're not able to walk up steps, you got to use the handicap ramp. We have a ramp. It's been pretty functional for about 20 years. It's a wooden ramp made out of plywood and 2x4s. It's got to be replaced. We can get by for, I figure, maybe 18 months, maybe 2 years. But at $400 a month, we pay. We have an estimate from the gentleman that cuts the grass for us at the firehouse and a couple other localities. It's almost 2 acres of grass. He said he'd cut it for $200 a cutting, $400 a month. Twice a month isn't enough. I bet none of us are going to cut our grass twice a month over the next 2 to 3 months, probably twice a week. But that would get us by. And I'd use the remaining, 4 months, December, January, February, March, and put that money toward the handicap ramp, which Flivana Housing Authority has specced out for us. I got Tom Payne and Ms. Holland on board. Tom went out and looked at it, drawn up plans. I didn't realize it'd be, they're going to help us, with cost estimates, but you're still talking Kim said basically $2,800 to $3,500 to build one. So, in a nutshell, if you can't do it, we'll survive. We'll bush hog and cut the grass when one of us has time to do it. But it's used quite a bit. It basically is almost a county building. The piece I didn't talk about is the mutual usage of the building for the septic system. Y'all probably know that. We got into the business of septic when ARC Hall gave the county the land to build a firehouse. And then the county and the firehouse and the ARC Hall have a mutual alternative drain field that was put in at no cost by EnviroClean with the commitment that it's on the ARC Hall land. County would pay any maintenance, you know, that came up with respect to that field so that the firehouse and the ARC Hall used it. Did you find that out? We hadn't spent any money on it, so. Anyhow, it's been a pretty effective system. We haven't had any issues. There you go.
So what do you guys think? Do y'all have a question for Mr. Sheridan?
I just know that Louisiana is probably the only rural county that has four senior citizens facilities. And the ARC has been really hard. Of course, every key is gone. I don't know how many people attend, but that has been a real positive thing.
That's like the only right thing besides voting that happened for us. Mm-hmm.
What are you saying is the only thing that happens?
Well, I mean, as far as the county stuff that's done in Kinstall.
Is what? I didn't hear what you
the
said.
The senior citizens come out there twice a month.
Yeah.
They go to each corner. They try to go to each corner so that they can get as many people involved as possible.
And I guess what we're asking is this would effectively be another one of the nonprofits on our list of nonprofits that ask for funding annually. I realize it's a little unique, but it's from a fire perspective, I know our firehouses, you know, just see that the idea of using them for the polling places, it was a major headache for Kent Soil when we did it there for years. It was a major headache for Palomar when they did it there for years. It was a big headache for Fort King. And what I'm saying is firehouse is an option for the county stuff, but if we could, if we were able to find a way that we can have their seniors or any other group that the county looking for, you know, square footage, we'd love to have them there weekly. It's a good building. It's solid. The $30,000 helped us get it, up to speed, with the exception of our maintenance and our handicap ramp. And we'll get there. We'll find that money one way or another. But this would be a great help to us.
I've been to gobs of the events there, you know, since being a kid.
The dances.
Yeah.
Learned a lot of things there.
Yeah.
How to dance.
We'll talk about that. Here's one question I have. If y'all get to where you can do the rentals more and become self-sufficient, will you come back to us and say?
Absolutely.
We don't need it anymore.
It's rented now, and honestly, it's not that revenue helps us cover our insurance. When we lost Payne Paving as their primary revenue source, we really started to struggle.
Which was how much? Were they giving you?
About a little over 1,000, you know.
Well, the biggest thing that they did was they basically made the parking lot 3 times bigger than it is because it always got gravel in there.
We always got gravel because they would leave 10, 15 tons and we...
What do you see as any barriers to this? Do you see any complaints? Do you see anyone saying, why is Blue Valley County financing ARC? Any barriers?
I'm aware of only one person's expressed a concern, but they expressed a concern about any number of things. This happened to be one of them. I'm not going to belabor that. I think it's, if you're not able to do this, like I said, we are now a nonprofit. We qualified. Takes forever, but we are. I foresee the working relationship between the ARC and the county as a very long-term relationship. I think it provides an excellent polling place because of the parking available. Firehouse was horrible, didn't have the parking. It provides a meeting place on, and we've used it any number of times for county meetings or organizations that want to talk to communities. It just is a good venue for next to no money.
And I gotta add one thing. I spoke with Chief Fuller, the fire chief, this afternoon, matter of fact. And we've got a gentleman that comes over and volunteers to cut the grass at the firehouse. If we possibly get that same gentleman to cut the grass there.
Already approached.
If we could get it to do both, it keeps us, fire department wise, from having to send our county work staff over there to drive 30 miles to cut 30 feet by 10 feet of grass or 15 feet of grass.
And he does that. He does that. He's a local Fluvanna guy, went to school in Fluvanna. Malcolm Price, you know Malcolm. He does the firehouse pro bono at no cost, just because he wants to give back. And however, I told him, I said, if we were lucky enough to catch some funds and we can pay for the ALC hall, I'll reach out to him first.
How many functions?
I'm sorry.
Do you know how many functions a year you all average there?
Well, the seniors right now up to 24, and that's if it's just the scheduled ones. We'll probably host 2-3 county events there. It can be anything from a big
water
planned
line.
Community at Ferncliff to Waterline.
Well, I don't just mean county. I mean,
oh, I'm sorry.
Renting it out or whatever.
Well, we're getting back into it. Obviously, we took a tremendous hit with COVID, so we as many as we can, not to be flip about it, it's more around graduation and because people like to use it for graduation parties. We're doing more wedding, receptions and stuff there. And it's not just Fluvanna people, frankly. We have folks that, a lot of Louisa and some Gutchman folks because, again, we're only a mile from 2 miles from either county.
And I'll just ask in context of if people say, why are you giving money to it? And if I'm going to say, well, although it's not government, it does a lot to support that community. And if somebody said, yeah, I can tell you they had, seven functions other than government.
Oh, I would tell you.
It'd be hard to say.
Well, you got the wrong person at the podium, but I could tell you Barbara Bowles could give you that answer. I'd say 35, 40. And I mentioned earlier, I think it simply gives us a viable resource for our county, if I take myself out of ARC hall mode, just as a polling place. And that's not just in November anymore. I mean, y'all have had Ms. Pace talk to you. I mean, we got primaries coming up. Every year it's the same thing. There's no such thing as one election in November. You got primaries and you got special elections. And they all come in and they need to be in there 3 days early at a minimum, so in a day afterwards. Every time there's any type of polling activity, it's about a 4-day event, all day, most of the night committed. I think it offers us, for next to no money, a viable place for occasional county functions and for regularly scheduled events through Parks and Rec and registrar. That's right now we don't get any money from the county. We got $30,000. We appreciated it. Used it, I think, very wisely. This would help us. I'm not going to make this into a.
Yeah.
This isn't a $250,000 discussion at all. Either you can or you can't.
Yeah. Would you limit? Say, if you had a party there,
do you have
alcohol? Do people? Would you have some? Rocks with the regulations. You have to have a license.
Have you been there?
It's not set up for it's not set up for alcohol on premises.
Okay.
There may occasionally be a misguided, uninformed citizen that would show up with a cooler.
Yeah.
And that's probably not unheard of to have that in the parking lot.
Right.
But no, ma'am, it's not set up for,
Danny used to walk around with a flashlight and was famous. I imagine Mr. Fairchild in the light of that flashlight once in a while.
I've taken too much of y'all's time on that, so.
Yeah.
I just got one last question for you.
Yeah, and I do have two other points on completely different. Not on the ARC hall. I don't even want to bring them up.
On the ARC, So you've been on the board for, you know, you're on the board for a long time. If you were on the board and Three Chop Community Center came and said, you did it for them, where's ours?
Do they use Three Chop to sway any county function?
I think that's a fair question.
I'm not disagreeing at all.
The memorandum of understanding.
If we could move the county functions, for example, to a local venue like one of the churches, we know Beaver Dam does the polling for us, we know that Antioch does that. If Bird Chapel, which I'm very familiar with, or Bueller, were to take on those functions, we have a budget that is set up to accommodate. It may not be great like any other church, probably in the county, but we can cover our yard maintenance, our capital needs, our insurance, because we build a budget to do that. What I'm telling you is we don't have a budget to do that. We have never been able to cover grass maintenance, as simple as that sounds, and then we lost our major contributor. We will survive, it's in my opinion. I'd like it to look better. I mean, honestly, we're down to now where we have to call about those four people and say, we got a wedding, function up there on Saturday. Can anybody cut the grass? Can somebody go? That's where we are at right now.
So my concern is somewhat like Mr. Churchill's.
Sure.
The memorandum of understanding essentially said that we were going to give you this money so that we would have the use of the place.
Right.
And we did contribute $30,000 for this, and because we use it as a polling place. So it was somewhat of a quid pro quo. I can certainly appreciate and understand the fact that COVID has had an impact on your rentals, and so therefore on your revenue stream, and so that this may be a one-time request or maybe a two-year request, and then at that point in time, it becomes part of the nonprofit request that we see every year as part of the budget season. But I think it could be viewed as a negative precedent for the board to sort of just blanket outright, say, yes, we use it, but we gave you $30,000 so that we could use it, and now we're giving you $5,000 a year to maintain it. That's certainly something that other nonprofits could look at and say, well, if you're doing it for them, why are you not doing it for us? And we have to measure all the requests that come from nonprofits.
I think y'all had like 30 nonprofits, 33.
It's small numbers, but I think like Antioch Baptist. What if Antioch comes to us and says, hey, we got some fees and you all use it? I'm thinking ahead. I devil's advocate every day. I'm not against it.
Locations for polling?
Yes, I think for Antioch, I think we pay an amount, and I don't know what that amount is.
But we're not currently compensating in
ARC
because this was part.
Because the MOU. It was arranged for the day's uses, for the days of use when the board gave the $30,000.
I see.
Which was done in order to provide safety for the polling place.
Yeah, and I think, again, we had a very good quote of, right. And I'm not saying the quote wasn't a good quote, but we, with the help of several really people in their county who, had the skill to come in and help with the electrical and do the work, we did $91,000 worth of absolutely necessary repairs for $30,000. We got it done.
It seems to me the way to handle this is a special request that comes out of board contingencies, that they get the money now, and then next year you come in and you make the request as a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, and I've considered that, Tony, and just honestly, I didn't particularly want to come in and do the presentation, but I think I'd be less than a good steward of the ARC if I didn't make you aware of the scenario. We lost our principal revenue stream. And we'll get the grass cut in between myself and Andrew Pullen and Jim Bowles and Fred Story and David Sheridan. We'll get it cut. But
when was that $30,000?
About 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
Give or take.
Here it is. It was March 1, 2018.
Okay. The floors were bad.
I'd say about 4 years ago.
Yes.
Well, I don't know if we had air conditioning.
Yes, we do. And that was one of the big improvements we put in there was AC.
Added AC.
AC is there now, and that's why it's a viable rental. And we got it in just in time for COVID.
Didn't it?
I wanted to know, where is Palmyra now? It's not in the Palmyra district.
Palmyra voting location?
Beaver Dam.
It's going to Beaver Dam.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but the town itself of Palmyra.
It's in Kinsdorf.
Well, there's another possibility to use that instead of ARC if they don't want us to.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yes, the board could certainly move the polling location from ARC.
One thing I'll say about using firehouses as polling stations?
Yes.
Cars get in the way. That's what used to happen to us when we used to use that. I know we used Palmyra for a long time, and we absolutely could use it. But as a fireman, I will tell you, if you use the fire stations, when you get a big presidential election or something like that, you end up, sometimes you might have a car parked, you got to get a car moved, get a fire truck out.
Yeah, location, I think, is...
Walk the union.
I mean, somebody who's down in the Kinsdorf area, and in general, on the more rural part of the county, might drive there versus, you know, having to drive all the way from there to, well, yes, if you get to Palmyra, if they're going to go to Palmyra, they probably just do it.
You know, when you think about town of Columbia all the way to Zion's Crossroad is a precinct, it's entirely up to y'all. I know moving precincts is a headache. It can be done. You'd like to kind of keep it...
Especially once the registrar's office is...
I can tell you, the firehouse is just a terrible place to have it. We did it for 50 years at Kinsdorf, around 40. And then you have to move your vehicles outside if you have to use the bays to catch up. And we've had freezing weather in November, and it just... The parking is, and that was what Palmyra really had to struggle with. You know, again, you're right down the primary highway. Parking is a beast. You know, there's just not much up there. They use the schools.
This is not an action item, right? This is a goal on the agenda next month, right?
Well, I think this is kind of like what Mr. O'Brien was talking about.
Yeah, but I think we have to put that on the agenda for next week.
But I think that... And I can shift. I didn't want to bring up this other stuff.
What's two other things that you wanted to say?
I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about revenue. You know, I'm just completely...
It's budget-related.
Yes, sir. Put on a commissioner hat. Mr. Dahl and I were talking earlier this week. He asked me if I could, you know, see what we were, additional revenue. Since we met and we gave the... in March, we picked up an additional 20 building permits for new homes. What's that mean? You know, it means that the round number about $220,000, $225,000 for each new home. That means that there will be in this budget an additional, with just these homes that I have in our office to add, almost $40,000, $39,500. So just for what it's worth, that's an additional piece of the revenue and it's not a matter of if we don't included in the budget, we don't get the revenue. It doesn't make any difference whether it's in the budget or not. If it's built, we bill it, and you know the revenue will come in. So I just wanted to let you know that continues to move along. We have to have a point on the ground. We pick usually about that 15th of March and set our revenue. You know, here's what the revenue is for real estate. Cars and trucks aren't like that. They are as of 1 January, you know, personal property. But we do pick up new real estate throughout the year. It's prorated throughout the year. That's the piece, I guess. In the second part of that, and we talked a little bit, and I know budget is a tough time. Don't forget, those 20 homes, that doesn't stop. If I come back to you in 45 days, it'll be another 20 homes probably. And so there's additional revenue you will get.
Okay, I'm going to do my next question. So up until June 30th, whatever building permits are part of that period fall into this budget year.
For budgeting, but we continue to collect after June 30th.
Right.
And that's the piece I want to make sure y'all are kind of really clear on. And that is, you know, the new budget, fiscal budget starts 1 June. And then we run through, but in January, so 9 months, 8 months from now, we do that new assessment. And my personal opinion is we're going to have probably an 8%, if not more, increase in our total real estate for that 1 January timeline. Now, what's that mean? Well, it means that for the calendar year 23, it'll go up my guess, 8%, maybe 9%. Real estate has not slowed down. I know they're talking about raising the prime, but it's all based on actual sales, and those sales are started in about the 1st of November of last year. So we are already 6 months, and it is not slowed down. Everybody here knows real estate continues to be kind of on, you know, at the record sales data. It may cool off as the Fed hits us with rate increases. They're starting to mention, you know, some words I don't like recession, et cetera. What I'm saying to you is this. There is no doubt in my mind, regardless of where we go from here to the end of December, we will have an increase in real estate. I think it'll be about 8%. So from January till June of 23, we'll pick up 4%, an estimate, 4% in additional real estate revenue. What's that equal to if you just do basic math? Again, we never build budgets based on guesses and estimates, but what that is $986,639 of additional revenue from January 1 to next 30 June, second half of the budget you're working on. That's not in this budget. Shouldn't be, but I think it will absolutely be there because the housing market has already.
I talked to somebody last night.
Kicked off.
They sold their house, or their child sold their house. They had three cash offers, all for $75,000 more than what they were asking for.
Yeah. And so let's say things do cool off, and they probably will because of rate increases on the prime lending rate or any, you know, cost of fuel. Because we're already gone through an 8 month, almost 9 month window that's been really aggressive, it's still going to leave us on the plus side. I think you're going to see a percentage increase of at least 5, probably 8% in January. And we will pick, if you cut that in half, say it's 8%, we take 4%. That's $986,000 of revenue that potentially you will have in your budget in the second half that you haven't built into this.
But did I hear you say that you felt that should not be considered?
Well, I think it, you know, you can't, I wouldn't recommend building a budget based on an estimate.
What might
but
be?
I would absolutely like to know the trends, if I were in y'all's chairs, of where we are, what I anticipate we will have, you know, throughout this fiscal year. If we had cooled off in real estate and houses were bringing less than appraised value, you know, and that used to, that was the case for about 7 years, from 07 through about 13. I could not tell you. I could tell you, you probably have less money.
I used 10% when I did it, just as a guesstimate, because Louisa was 12% this past year. I used 10,
so,
and it's like 12.5 million is half of our collection.
What I'm saying, Mr. Fairchild, is that we certainly can't, in my mind, we can't absolutely predict we'll have that money, but I think it is an extremely good chance it will be there. I
so
can't imagine a scenario.
Revenue?
Pardon me?
Why would we not use estimated revenue?
Why would we not?
Yeah.
Well, you will use it.
No, you're saying why don't we use it to budget for?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I keep hearing Mel say that.
I found that from my perspective, I don't sit at the board table. From my perspective, I try to give y'all hard numbers.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to build a budget based on my estimate. That's why my real estate numbers and personal property numbers and public, they are hard numbers. That money will be there.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's not just upon your estimate. It's based upon facts,
right,
and figures.
The number that Mr. Dahl and his team and I have for total real estate valuation, $2.835 billion, that's a hard number. That's absolutely because we know that, and, you know, that's what we bill out now. And Ms. Linher will bill that out in about 2 weeks. What I anticipate is we will have a increase in the billing from January 1st until 30, you know, next 5 June, when you have to make that payment, I think it'll be probably 8% higher than what we are collectively than where we are now. And that's based not just on guessing from here to end of December, but from, they cut the sales data off for this current year reassessment on 1 October, so they could work math and give you all the information needed to build a budget. And so we've got 3 months from 1 October now through April, so 7 months with 8 to go. And this first 7 months has been the record real estate growth.
So, Mr. Fairchild, this, I mean, one thing, as Mr. Sheridan said, so about 70% of our revenue comes from real estate or taxable values, and so those numbers are hard numbers that the commissioner gives us of what he has on the books, and then certainly we make estimates on that other 30%, you know, like sales tax. We don't know exactly what we're going to get for sales tax, so things like that we have to estimate. We have to figure out what are we estimating for building permits this year. So there are estimates that we do.
I'll go back to his chart.
Yeah,
the chart that he gives us, and you give us a great chart, but you said I can't go against this chart. And I can't give you numbers earlier, because Mr. Weaver always wants numbers earlier. Because if we estimate and we're wrong, then it goes the other direction.
I'll give you a really good example that puts it in perspective, public utilities, which is a big number for us. We pick usually about $5 million in public utility money, specifically $4,550,392. So that $4,550,000 that we got is built into this budget is the number that we had for our public utilities from last year. I'm not guessing that it will go up or down. And unfortunately, the state doesn't give us the public utility information until September. So, you know, we can look in the mirror, or the rearview mirror, you know, when we get to September and say, well, that sticking with that hard number works for us versus me guessing it'll probably go up 8-9%, and sometimes it goes down. Real estate
sticking for education. I'm not trying to make any point.
Yeah.
I'm just when I think about it and I compare it to the business world.
Yeah.
And you do estimate.
Yeah,
and
except
your trends would.
I mean, the difference is that I mean, we just have essentially a $12 million pot to play with on an $80 million budget, which isn't an awful lot. So if we guess wrong, then we don't have the ability to go out and raise the revenue without borrowing.
Well, we're digging the fund balance first.
Yeah,
in good case, we've done this because other boards have been in the position where they got a $2 million hole to try to fill, you know, because from 2007 to 2013, the revenue declined, and we were sitting there trying to figure out how in the world will we have some additional real estate, you know, revenue to help cover the $600,000 hole we've got in schools or in anything else. It's just that we've been in a very, very, you know, bullish market since 2000.
I can remember using $600,000 in a fund house.
Yes, ma'am. I've seen these boards. Yeah. And been a part of them where we built the budget based on fund balance. Mm-hmm. In fact, I will tell you that in 1994 through about 98, we went to the bank across the street in Palmyra and borrowed money to make the monthly payroll. So we're at a point where we're not using estimates. I just wanted y'all to know, I think it's a growth trend. I absolutely believe y'all will have about $1 million more in January through June than you are building a budget for.
Does almost no municipality consider and put that into their budgeting?
I think some may have in the past, and they got burnt, you know.
Yeah, because the Board of Supervisors at the end of the day, right?
I mean, wondering what the trends are. Yeah. I'm wondering if there are ones that it's not burnt.
If we projected that, then we could lower the real estate tax rate by 3 cents, right? But if we're wrong, okay.
And then you come up short.
It ultimately evens out because you do that when you do the reassessment and, you know, you do the objective.
And the one thing to think about this, too, is you know, generally, you know, besides, you know, faring better on, you know, expenditures, things like that usually assist with building the fund balance every year. So if we budget, I mean, we certainly could budget up to the very hilt, what we think, but again, you know, that's not using, from the commissioner's standpoint, real taxable values at this point. And
to some degree, we build it in a sense, if you think about it, like when the budget process first starts, we have an initial number that the county administrator is presenting, but we also know that there's a strong likelihood that the commissioner of revenue will bring in additional funds that weren't part of that picture at that point in time, because we can look at it. What those additional funds would be, hard to say.
You probably get, when do you give your first numbers to the county administrator?
January.
Yeah.
And that's why we use the previous year's math, because we haven't got to, who in the world could have anticipated a 36% increase in personal property?
Don't we speculate on delinquent taxes?
Oh, yeah, we do.
We put in a $700,000.
Yeah, yeah, we
how much we'll collect on those.
It's right. It's certainly a really good point to consider as you approach your budgeting cycle for next year. How much additional revenue, if any, did we get in real estate? Or did we decline? You know, there could be something cataclysmic.
Yeah.
We just happen to have been in a 9-year growth cycle. It won't stay that way forever.
A few years ago, we were looking at, you know, when they were talking about freezing the federal budget, you know, what that impact was going to be on us.
Yeah, we
were literally saying, well, here's how long we can last without that money.
I think I'm remiss if I don't give y'all this information. Because if you're sitting here in March, and you go, what's the revenue picture look like? Oh, it looks pretty darn good. We had an 8% increase 3 months ago. I think it's important to make sure y'all have that. You get to see the bigger picture as you look forward.
And that's where it comes in July. We do that's where the equalized rate comes from. You know, to make the same money we made this year, budgeted for this year, we can, if it goes up 8%, then that number will drop 8%.
I generally don't estimate, because I'm not in the business of, you know, reading a crystal ball. But I think it's important y'all have that kind of
perspective. It's educational.
Because we're halfway through the window. It's not a guess, the reassessment. It's based on actual sales data. They don't just go, well, I think a 3-bedroom, 2-bath ought to be about this. They look at the sales from 1 October of last year through this coming November, and they go, those properties sold for 8.5% over the assessed value collectively. And they look at single story, and they do it by category. They look at farms that are 50 acres or larger. But I just wanted you to know, I think that I hope I can stand here and tell you this in March of next year, that it's still looking really good.
No,
you can't do that. But this is a very unusual time that we're in right now.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
And we really can't count
I hope I'll be able to. I've had to stand here and say that real estate revenue is down by 17%, and y'all got to figure out how to balance the budget.
And in that case, the second half, we lose 17%.
Well, yeah, that's if you decrease the tax rate.
Well, I mean, if we equalize it, what I'm saying is, this year we stand to gain.
It's probably a little more than you needed to know. Well, it looks pretty darn good right now, but it's y'all see the writings on the wall as quickly as I will. I think this reassessment in 23 will be a very good one. I can't predict beyond that.
That 4.5, you're saying, you're just averaging $225,000 per house times 20 houses. Is that a real number, or is that just?
That's a real number.
The 39.5.
You absolutely got 39.5. I guarantee you that.
So
because that's in my office.
So that's where you just.
Now, did I sit there and add them all up and divide by 20? Which is actually 23. But there's some in there that are 400,000, and you don't build too many houses anymore for under 175. 225 is probably conservative.
I would tell you isn't the median value now 260 something?
I suspect it is. You know, I don't want to guess at it. Like I said, I try to be conservative. 225,000 is conservative. If every 20 houses right now at 87 cents, that's $40,000 of additional revenue. And I would tell you the way things look, you know, we could talk to the building department to be sure, but we're getting 15, 20 houses a month right now.
Every time I drive around another road, I see another house being built somewhere.
So, you know, if Andy came in and said, hey, I got 27 building permits for the month of April, then that's about $45,000 that you're going to have in additional, because we do prorate for houses. You build a house in Fluvanna in any particular month, we look at the remaining months. The code requires us to do that. If you build a house between January 1 and October the 30th, I can look at Caitlin, she'll correct me if I'm wrong, she knows it probably better than I do. We send you a bill, a prorated bill. If you get CO that's on the 2nd of November, November, December, you get a pass. You don't get a bill until next year. So as we go forward, this budget is built on what is built now, on right. what yeah. I have on the books. If we continue to build like I think we will it, 20 houses a month is a little aggressive, but now say 10 is not. Every 2 months, that's about $40,000 of extra revenue, maybe 45. So that is where Mr. Dahl made the point earlier. We've been able to, on the good years, put a little money into the uncommitted fund balance, you know, and that has helped us. And y'all may be the board that begins to inherit the decline of their economy. You know, because
I think we will be. It's a good Trish.
I do too.
I was trying to understand process and reasoning, but to what Trish said, well, I'm sure not going to bet money on anything this year that I can't get my money out.
Not at $5 a gallon and war inflation higher than it's been. I'm not an economist, but I'm not stupid either. We've got inflation higher than it's been in 40 years, $5 a gallon gas, and a war overseas, and the public, you know, the major news stations are mentioning the word recession. I think they see that they're starting to. It's been a great 9 years. I hope it stays that way. But there you go.
That's very educational for me.
High Point, the subdivision across from Panorama, they've got two houses in there now.
Yeah,
they're on the roof.
Right.
They're not living in them, but they're on the roof.
Two houses at the Donger Bluff.
I went down there this week.
But that's a good rule of thumb. I would just tell you, for every 20 houses,
$40,000.
$40,000, probably
$45,000. The house on 612 Winfield, how close it is between, have you been down Winfield Road?
Not.
Like coming off from.
Is that the drive-in?
Yeah, from Cohasset.
Cohasset, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Coming through there.
Yeah, the drive-in.
Going to the towns up there.
In between. I'm wondering if every time I go by, I think, is that like it's the house I used to live in?
Where sheriff used to live.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see what will happen. Let's say we start to have a slow decline. You know, the cools off. You know, the Fed raises rates five, six more times. They anticipate that. What I'm really interested to see is what happens to the. I know it's going to be happening to real estate. It'll start to cool off. But the personal property, the used car market, you know, it's not sustainable paying $85,000 for a pickup truck, you know. Used cars are now up almost 40%. Y'all know that. That's why I had such a big increase in y'all have the revenue. That's not a guess. That's how much we'll build. I don't know. I've never seen them decline personal property, you know, the annual evaluation we get. It does go down. Usually older cars get a little bit older. You know, they decline, but not appreciably. Will we see a 25% drop in cars in 1 year is what I'm trying to say. I don't know. If we do, and we built a budget around that, then it's going to be interesting times. Been other interesting times for other boards, and y'all may be on the precipice of having to be creative.
Oh, we're always on that precipice.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Al.
Didn't mean to get into all of that.
Yeah, actually I did.
All right, Mr. Booker, do you still think I talk more than he does?
It's not a chance.
We had that conversation the other day about that, and it's just, it's stuff that you have to plan for, especially if we start to, you know, knock on wood, we've been living where we haven't had to deal with the downside of it, Mr. O'Brien, you and I, since we've been on here. It's always gone up a little bit.
It's called a recession.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, I'm just saying, we haven't had to deal with that, but next year, vice versa, we're going to be $1 million extra.
Folks who up there from 06, well, when 05 to
12. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, but we I mean, I think the big difference is, okay, first, I mean, yes, you can talk all that and you can look back at 2012 and what happened to our county, but a lot of that had to do with a really, really high foreclosure rate at the lake, which, you know, was in part built by the growth of the lake and how quickly that happened. And then the fact that people had bought in the time period when their houses were, you know, they were buying it, and, you know, when they got the reassessment, they were down 30%, so they threw the keys away. That was really an unusual time for the housing market from that standpoint. Just because we go into recession doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to see the same level of high foreclosure that we saw before.
I almost plead with the board to continue the course that, you know, the go at it, stay the course on reassessments.
Absolutely.
One of the most disheartening things I saw is from that 07 to 2012 timeline was the board elected not to reassess. And we had people at the lake and throughout the entire county, because we're all in this together, that had houses that were selling for 40% less than they were assessed at. And that's what they were doing. They were putting the keys in an envelope, mailing to the mortgage company, and just walking away.
So
we could have fixed it. We could have helped that with reassessments by trying to stay somewhere close. You know, as we've chased sales going up, and we set an assessment January 21, and now we're already 8-10% above that. It was that much and more going down. We had an assessment of January of 07, and by July of 07, 6 months later, it was already 12 months under assessed. And by 08, it was 20% under assessed, under the assessed rate. And that's where people just couldn't sell houses and just walked away.
And to me, that's the biggest thing I take away from what you've said in educating us. If we know that we've got a downward spin, that million you just talked about that we're going to be positive, we could very easily be $1 million negative at the end of that, because January 1 we're collecting less.
I think it was policy, you know, and I don't know if it was just for that period of time, but it was policy in essence that in order to save money, the county didn't do reassessments.
Because it cost a lot
to do a reassessment. By that, you know,
yeah,
I was like, I'll do it every year.
One other thing, if you'll allow me, and I disagreed with it then, and I certainly would do it, and there was at least among a few of the members, it was, well, what difference does the assessment make if we keep the rate low? You know, 35% over assessed, I can have a 50-cent tax rate. Looks pretty good, but the homeowner, you know, going into foreclosure, you know, and drove, that was the perspective. And the only reason that we did it in 12 was because you had to buy a law.
6 years is much.
6 years. So I would implore the board to continue to stay the course on reassessment. It keeps us close, and code says we should be at or as close as practical to 100% of fair market value. And fair market value ebbs and flows, and we chase it every 2 years. That's pretty good.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
With 11,000 homes, 20 homes per month is really just 0.5% growth in homes in the course of a year.
All right. Action matters. Do we have anything?
No, just, but if we're still talking
budget here, mm-hmm.
I've got an update for ARPA that can
affect the budget.
But I'm not sure if you want to go through the rest of the items that we can go under unfinished business on 10.
I mean, we've done everything we've got to do.
Okay.
Let's talk about ARPA and then we can get out of here.
So we got an update that U.S. Treasury updated, and this was, it's probably about a month or so ago, updated their final rule. Within the last week or so, I had a conversation with David Foley, who's our auditor, and you know, we're talking about some ARPA funds and uses, and he sent me over some interesting updates for ARPA after looking at some of the specific language in there that could affect what the board's doing in this budget this year. So the one thing is, I'm not sure if the board remembers this before, but there's the item called revenue loss. Before revenue loss, you had to go through and you had to determine your revenue loss based upon this complex formula. As of effective April 1 now, the new Treasury final rule says localities that are getting ARPA funds, you can choose to take a standard allowance of revenue loss up to $10 million. So what that means is, the county can say that $5.3 million that we're getting, we can use it towards revenue loss. And what that does is it opens up a whole slew of uses that you can do. It opens up a lot of flexibility that you can use that revenue for. So if you kind of look here, these are just some things that, you know, one, it's to respond to the public health emergency. You know, it clarifies rules that funds, you know, what funds can be used for capital expenditures. It opens up the capital expenditures usage a lot. It talks about expanded uses for communities that are impacted or disproportionately impacted. And then it also talks about uses to restore and support government employment. Including hiring above pre-pandemic baselines, providing funds to employees that experience pay cuts, furloughs, and providing retention incentives. In addition, it talks about, it opens up things for premium pay and investments for infrastructure. The interesting thing, though, with this is, as I was talking with our auditor, and this is kind of his email to me, he said the biggest change between the prior rule, which was called the interim final rule, and the final rule is the current established a standard allowance. Funds received for revenue loss should be used for government services, which include any service traditionally provided by a government. And then government services is the most flexible use category. And it says, accordingly, we are encouraging localities to consider using the revenue loss provisions under the final rule. And the locality would have to make that provision by the end of this April. So just to kind of show what that looks like, let me just kind of go in and open up. Where is it? So under this rule here, let me just find it. So it talks about, you can use the two methods, but again, the standard is for up to $10 million. But when you talk about spending on government services generally include any service traditionally provided. And here's just an example of this, construction of schools, hospitals, general government administration, staff and administrative facilities, provision of police, fire, and other public safety services, including purchase of fire trucks and police vehicles. So under this revenue loss, you could really open up a lot of what we're doing in the budget a little bit. For instance, we're using fund balance to pay for fire and rescue vehicles, sheriff's vehicles. The board can say, so we're going to be getting $5.3 million for ARPA funds. We've already committed about $1 million of it. I think we committed some for Fork Union sanitary system water upgrades, and then the broadband project with CVAC, Firefly, and Dominion. But so the board can say, well, we want to use that $4.3 million and we want to apply it towards revenue loss. And then what that means is that $4.3 million can be used for a slew of things that fall under government services, generally include any service traditionally provided by the government. So in this budget, instead of using fund balance to balance the budget, the board can say, well, we want to leave that fund balance alone, and as long as we make the allocation that we're using all that money for revenue loss, we can then say if we've got, I think it was $1.8 million that we're using to fund sheriff's vehicles and fire rescue apparatus, we can offset that with the ARPA money. In addition, there's language that talks about retaining staff and paying inflationary levels for compensation. So after talking with the auditor, the board could even choose that COLA that's being provided to staff is being funded out of the tax rate. Could be
well, and you can hire additional people.
You can hire additional people as well. And then again, there's a lot of uses that talks about. You can it opens up the use for capital expenditures, which wasn't allowed before. I mean, a prime example here is it talks about administrative facilities. There's money where it could be used toward the administrative facilities. And whatever the board chooses for that to mean, it could mean quite a bit. So from a budget standpoint, if the board says, because what we would have to do, we would have to come back to the board next week, and if the board says we want to use all that remaining $4.3 million towards revenue loss, then we have to apply those funds towards government services over the next 3 years. You know, something to that to be looked at. Maybe at some point we want to expand our EMS system. Those funds could be used towards that. So there's for
immediate impact, though. I mean, outside of, I mean, Grant, we could say, okay, we're going to re-advertise a different budget at this point in time.
Well, all
lower the rate, and that you could do that, but I'm not suggesting we do that.
Well, yeah, well, what you could do, I mean, like I said, this is where it provides the board some flexibility. You could say, well, instead of using fund balance,
right, and that's what I was going to drive to.
It's just a flip flop of the revenue that you're using, so we're not changing the dollar amount. Right. You're just
well. Here's my other question: if we're lowering it, we don't have to re-advertise, right?
Correct.
Now, if we're lowering it, we don't have to re-advertise. We did the COLA, and we did the $400,000 out of this.
I think there's a lot.
And we could adjust.
You could adjust
personal property.
You could adjust some rates. Yeah, even lower. Now, and again, this is if the board wants to use it for that. You know, there's a lot of good uses that could be. The funds could be used for water and sewer infrastructure projects. But again, if we're offsetting potentially what we're doing from a fund balance usage, and then two from a tax rate usage, you know, it might may provide some more flexibility down the road. But that's kind of something that the board has to kind of weigh and figure out how to apply those funds. But as our auditor said, applying it towards revenue use is going to provide the county the most flexibility, because as long as it's for government services, I mean that's a pretty broad use for using that revenue loss.
But Eric, if we use it, does that mean that we will put ourselves in a position that when that money is not there, we have to maintain what we've established?
Yes.
Are we going to put things like buildings and cars and vehicles?
That's a great question.
Which you don't have to worry about.
I was going to say either capital or letting it affect the taxpayers. Because if you put it into raises or whatever, once it's gone, then we're...
Yeah, from a raise, from a COLA standpoint, like I said, I'm not saying you could... You maybe want to do that, because again, if you put it into a COLA, if you offset ARPA funds for the COLA, well, that's now part of your base budget. So you're gonna, if you lower the budget because of that, you're gonna have to increase it next year, because now that's part of the budget.
Right.
What I'm saying though is probably for more of a capital one-time use, mm-hmm. it may be beneficial to use for those
things.
Yeah,
that's all that I was asking.
Well,
and understand.
Yeah.
And our 2024, 2025 budgets in terms of, you know, what we have in CIP projects in relationship to the revenues that we have, we're grossly underfunded if you want to look at it from that standpoint.
Yeah, so in this budget, the board can say, well, we've got $1.8 million in And again, I'm just going with fire and police vehicles, because this is the U.S. Treasury's document that it specifically lists those items, so.
And that's where I would not want to hire new people, because that's what that's my one fear, and I'm not a part of the school board budget, but they talked about hiring new people with funds that came from the federal government.
Sure.
When that money runs out, then they're going to come to us and ask us to go, okay, well, hey, we got to pay for these 10 positions that we hire.
Yeah, I mean, right now you got the COLA in the budget, but maybe from a fund balance standpoint, maybe you want to use ARPA for those purchases and preserve our fund balance even more. So down the road, if we have, and again, too, you know, I know there was talk about administrative facilities, you could potentially use it towards some of that as well.
So do you have to, so would you be reworking certain sections of the budget?
If the board said, we just want to, for instance, we want to flip-flop the sheriff's vehicles and the fire and rescue apparatus,
And how much would that?
Let me just go in here, because I was looking at it. So looking at those, so right here we had 308 budgeted for sheriff's vehicles, and then just a little under 1.5 million. So the total is 1,801,160.
Okay. That number is how much tax?
That's not tax, that's just fund balance.
That's just cash.
We keep 1.8.
What's the COLA balance?
Okay.
What was the COLA balance?
It was 550.
Okay.
For, is that everybody or just the county?
No, that was just county.
550,000 just to do the county?
Yes.
So if we did that, and that's the only thing I'm looking at, and then we'd have to replace that with the money Mel's talking about.
Well, you're going to have to raise the tax rate.
Next year we'd have to raise the tax rate.
Again, one-time money, I'm not a big fan of using it for ongoing things. I mean, I think from a capital standpoint, I think it's...
So are you saying that we could do some things where we could lower the tax rate?
Well, we'd lower it this year, but we didn't raise it next year.
Yes, you could lower it this year, but you have to turn around next year.
But you don't know what's going to happen with...
Well, you never know, right?
Yeah, but...
Assessment,
and I wanted to said it a little while ago, if it starts doing this, then we've got to raise the tax rate to have enough money at the end of the year.
Maybe you lower it this year, but maybe next year you got to raise it right back up again. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to let the board know, from a budget standpoint, you do have some additional flexibility. I'm not necessarily recommending to use it from anything that's affected by the tax rate, but I think from a CIP standpoint, I think it makes sense to.
But we don't have to actually do anything about that as far as next week goes.
Well, we would because one of the things, and I would have to look at, it talks about replacement funds. You generally don't want to use the funds as a replacement for funds that are already appropriated. So so if we're building the budget right now and it's not...
So that's an easy move you just put...
Oh yeah, that's an easy move, just flip-flopping fund balance to ARPA funds. Right. And so again, all we're doing is we're not really changing the budget.
That still gives us $2 million left.
But are you adding a headache? Because if you don't, then we... still going to put it in the fund balance when we say we're replacing.
Yeah, but the only thing with this ARPA is, remember, if the board says, because we have to file something with the U.S. Treasury by the end of the month, and we have to say whether or not we want to use it for this revenue loss. And if we use it for the revenue loss, we can only use it, again, there's a broad range of things you could use it for, and so we could potentially use it for CIP for the next couple of years, or you know, if there's anything else from a water sewer project, you could use it for something like that. But what I'm saying is if you
We have no sewer.
Yes.
We have no sewer.
Yes, right? or maybe you use it towards the CIP items, leave the fund balance, kind of cut back on some of the fund balance, so if we need to do more of a county utility project, well, maybe it makes sense to dip in into the fund balance and just pull it from there.
Right. Well, we still have questions with regards to what funds that we can use from the bill. I don't want to go over from the infrastructure plan that Brad Humphreys talked about.
Yeah, right.
So we don't know how we can use that money right now. But I mean, good news is we have money that we can use for capital improvement plans. You know, over the next 3 years that we didn't have before.
And yeah. We're building a fund balance that if we have to build a smaller school, let's say we build a kindergarten
or addition or whatever.
Or pre-K kindergarten school, we could do that in cash money.
I mean, so it's talked about there. Using debt proceeds once the design for county buildings are done. Well, if you start offsetting some of the ARPA funds, you could potentially use fund balance to fund fund portions of some of those buildings down the road instead of taking out all debt.
So are we making, we're just getting some information.
You're just getting some information.
So are you going to give us something that says option one, two, any way to make us?
He's just going to give us something for replacing.
He's basically recommending right now that we just switch the $1.8 million that is currently allocated to be used for fund balance for these vehicle apparatuses.
Yeah,
that puts $1.8 million back into fund balance that we were reducing. Mm-hmm. And we still have another $2 million left over, roughly.
Of ARPA funds.
Of ARPA funds that we can then allocate for the variety of programs that we have here.
Yeah, and so that's an easy, that's kind of an easy switch on our end. And the one thing I would just need to know from the board, because again, we've got to get the package ready tomorrow, is I would bring a proposal back for the board, if the board says let's use that whatever's left of ARPA that hasn't been allocated, use it towards the revenue loss.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think this requires consideration, and that's an easy move.
Yeah. Oh yeah. This flip flopping fund balance to ARPA funds. That's an easy fix on my end. So that's a big deal.
Mr. Stone, yep. Did you say that we had to do this by the end of April? Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
next week.
It would be next week's meeting. So what would happen is the board's going to adopt a budget, and if the board says tonight let's flip flop fund balance for ARPA funds, then we can do that. And when the budget comes back to the board, that change will be made, and then we'll bring a motion back to the board next week to say whatever's remaining of ARPA funds, the remaining we're going to get, we want to use it all towards revenue loss. And then, so at the end of the month, we'll have to file with the Treasury Department for that's what our intended use is. And then over the next, by the end of December 31st, 2024, we just have to use those ARPA funds for those intended purposes.
Sounds great.
Which, again, is general government, going back here. Government services generally include any service traditionally provided by a government and these capital things. And again, it's pretty flexible and pretty wide open.
Can you send this to us?
Yeah. Yeah, well, what I was going to do is I was going to include this in your next package.
Okay.
This document, I was going to include the bulletin from Robinson Farmer Cox where they kind of explain it a little bit, and then this document, which is a 40-some page document that goes over all the things, but the revenue.
Five pages.
Yeah. it's easy reading.
I'm asking a lot of the people.
Yeah, it's asking a lot of a homemaker, my grandma. I have. Where are we on unfinished business?
We're almost done.
Okay, I cannot done this. Finish. On the 20th, we said we were going to do a retreat on the 30th. You all may have started working on what you're going to do. We're going to do our own retreat. We're not going to have to facilitate it.
No, not, that's not
do
true.
We have,
can we are having a facilitator.
Have topics to bring to.
We are meeting. We've got a meeting with someone from BLGMA about a potential facilitator, just to see what it would look like, and if there's
Virginia
any
Virginia Institute of Government.
Yes.
Oh, Virginia Institute of Government, and to see if there would be a charge to do it.
Yeah, facilitator would be the best, but I was just trying to think of what would be the topics I have.
Well, I think primarily the topics from what I heard from the board, again, it's up to the board, you know, I think I heard a lot of on comp plan and some changes in there, I think, because I think some of that lends itself to you know, what is the board's kind of strategy and their strategic plan over the next couple of years? And then also, you know, what are some things or what does the board want to see accomplished in this next 2-year period besides the comp plan as well? So that's kind of how I could kind of see it. But again,
I agree that I don't know if this retreat is the time to do it, but I keep feeling like it's not getting traction here. But I feel like there are what I call in business policy and procedural type things that that I really want to see us adding into or doing things better as structurally as and that aren't there. And I'm not sure where they're when they grab hold. And so I'm just trying to. I was thinking about it over the past couple of days of having some period to have that conversation in this retreat. We're not sitting here, you know, pushing 9 o'clock and so
right, on. That's what I have that on my list as well.
And honestly, I think, you know, if, like I said, Kelly and I have a meeting with them tomorrow, you know, I think a facilitator would probably add some value with the board and having kind of a new makeup of the board too, with Mr. Fairchild being new to the board. And again, I think, you know, you can get into procedures and process, and, you know, if the comp plan is an important piece of what the board wants to see, there could be some time for that. And so that's just kind of what, again, we've got a meeting tomorrow, and so we're going to try and come up with some things. And then what we would hope to do, if unless the board has any other thoughts on how they envision a retreat to look.
Yeah. I think we need to review what our mission and purpose is. I don't think we do a lot with reaching our community. There are health issues. There's a new Fluvanna Louisa health director that I'm going to meet with next week. That's new. There's a voucher program that is being up in the air, which benefits Fluvanna and Louisa people with affordable housing. I don't, you know, all those little things, I don't know if that's a retreat issue, not where do we stand on those kind of things.
I've got one thing that's been brought up to me, and I don't fully understand it. The difference between a cluster subdivision out in those green areas versus one that's a minimum of 5 acres or 2 acres or 3 acres. Mm-hmm. If we could do a positive negative or a look at that. To me, that's one thing that I don't understand it at all. I understand the philosophy a little bit, Mr. Miles. I'm not trying to put pressure on you, but the positive and negative too, because I have a lot of people talking to me about those, because we've had our bigger issues have been, we talked about that, with pop-up subdivisions.
And I just had a concern a couple of days ago, the same issue that Chris brought up. That, you know, these three committees still are floundering. They don't really know what they're doing or how they're doing and so forth.
I talked to people on two of those.
That's still kind of, and I'm going to go, there's a meeting tomorrow.
Yeah, they got their first meeting tomorrow. Well, I mean,
they don't know. I talked to people in two of the three committees today.
They don't
know. And they aren't sure what their purpose and direction is. And it's just not.
Well, isn't it where you said hopefully tomorrow they'll understand? I think that was the date y'all gave, but I can't remember.
They just needed more direction before now.
So it's all
more clarity.
The committees are only meeting tomorrow. The public will not be there.
No, there's a public. So the committee meetings are not like a big public meeting. It's the meetings for the committees. There is a public piece where the public can come in and ask questions,
like public comments,
give comments.
But it will meet individually. They'll meet somewhere in the room together.
Yes. The advisory group will meet in a room and discuss.
Put the gloves on and come out.
Yes.
Okay, so after the 14th, if there are no more, if no one says any more to me, then I know they understand it.
If they're
I think it's somewhat unrealistic. I mean, I've been in this business now for 8 years, and there's still a lot of things about planning that I don't understand, right? I mean, they're not going to be experts in planning just because they met once.
And I don't think they're looking for that.
I know, but I'm saying it's a very broad and very complex issue that isn't, you know, easily resolvable just by saying, well, here's point A, point B, point C.
Well, it should be.
I mean, I don't know. I mean,
this is important to know in the board, not just, I mean, last week we kind of said it and then it went away. There are people who are saying, citizens who are saying, that organizationally, the onboarding of this, that they're not saying I want to be a planner. They're not saying I want to know anything about planning. The onboarding from the people that they give their tax dollars to say this should be a smoother start, they're saying it's not going well. And that has nothing to do with whether they're a good planner or whatever. They feel they're in the dark. And especially some of them who've been waiting for some time to see what the comprehensive plan process was going to be and so on. And then they're going, wow, finally I was put on some committee and I still don't have a clue what's going on. And there's just no organization that you, that's a broad statement. When you go on board to an organization, you tend to have more clarity from the start of the reason you're there. Whether it's a some version of a mission statement or whatever, they're frustrated.
Well, I would say if they're still not clear tomorrow, then we have an issue.
Well, I'd say we had an issue before that because they, as I said last week, they came on. We don't want, as a well-run organization, we don't want them going through all that and going, oh, finally, now I know. You don't want people feeling frustrated and in turmoil over this thing that they've offered their time to be committed to. That will fix the future. It won't fix the past. I just don't want to keep doing that.
No, I understand that, but I can't go back in time and fix what maybe they're doing at this point. But hopefully, going forward with this, we can change it and we can make it clear on what the direction is for each one of these advisory groups.
I'm trying to. None of us can go back and change time. I'm trying to affect a mentality of an organization.
Right.
And the mentality is to not let that happen. And so if it happens once and it's a mistake, but I haven't heard anybody say yet, that was a mistake. If it's a mistake, if citizens are feeling this way, and I don't know if the rest of you aren't here, but it certainly sounds like Moselle and I are, that in just simple organizational processes, to me, it would seem that we would not want to do it the way that it has started. And so I want to affect that these people can have clarity of going, oh, hey, there was a mistake, or whatever that is, we've learned from this and we'll do this differently. But if it's so, that we have nothing to learn, then it just doesn't meet simple process.
But I guess my question would be, since it's so simple, what are some examples of what should have been done at this point?
It's not simple.
It's a simple question, right? I mean, what are the examples of what should have been done at this point?
A mission statement of...
But the comprehensive plan is the mission statement.
We're not talking about the whole plan.
We're not talking about these committees.
We're talking about the
mission. What is it you as a committee have been brought on board to do?
Right.
It has nothing to do with the comprehensive plan.
From what I understand, I may be wrong, but from what I understand, the traditional planning process for the comprehensive plan is an ongoing portion, which has to be done every 5 years, and that they start on that process many years in advance of it,
right.
Okay, and that they review chapters, not to try to make the entire thing entirely different, but they review chapters to evaluate what has changed and what has happened over the course of the period and where the county is being guided from that standpoint by the direction of the Board of Supervisors. That's essentially the process. So if you're part of a committee that is reviewing, say, public works, then you're looking at it from that perspective. Right. That is your mission statement as part of that. To me, that seems pretty clear, but maybe we need to spell that out.
And here would be my question, and this is the one that up there. in the past when we've done this, and you've been around a lot longer than I have doing this, I mean, we've done it once. And we had no committees at all when we did it before. Correct, Mr. Dahl?
Right.
Nope. I think it's the first time we're trying to get the committees involved. So we're working out the groundwork of it, and it's going to, it's like anything. It's like when we dealt with COVID. I said this 1,000 times. Anybody tells you they know what to do and have the plan laid out in front of them is a fool. So we're you're right. We need to have a mission statement, and that's something that hopefully we can get worked out and take care of this time. But this is the first time I think we've ever done this because we're trying to be more open. We're trying to get more involvement from the community.
Give them a better
platform to speak.
Well, I'll leave you with this. We had an idea, wherever the idea came from, we knew why we onboarded these people. We don't have to figure that out tomorrow. We know why we created these committees. And we're not communicating that to them. They're floundering and they're frustrated.
I wish I could name the people who are frustrated. These are people who are working in this county forever.
I'm sure that they are, and one person needs to take responsibility for that, right. And that's me. And I'll take responsibility for that. Because, I'm going to Teddy Roosevelt. This is a history teacher coming out in this pulpit. Okay? I got the biggest title. The buck stops right here. No. We will take care of that for future reference, because we'll be able to use this to come up with exactly what you're talking about. And being able to hand them something, say, here's the simple things that we want you to do.
Right.
A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. And give us your involvement. Give us your input. When you think you hear something that can be helpful, add it in.
Those are the steps. It's mentality and approach.
And I'll take the blame for that. We all are, but like I said, I'm not making myself more important than anybody else, but like I said, that's history. Buck stops here. I'll take that. It's my fault.
And
we're going to learn from it and move forward.
If this isn't straightened up, we're taking you outside, tar and feathering you.
Yes, ma'am.
No offense, but just because you're the chair does not make you the county. We are the buck.
Well, we can all take it. I'll take it right now because I'm the one sitting here.
I'll take it, and we'll figure it out tomorrow after they meet, and we'll see where things are. And
good.
I'll make sure I'm at part of the meeting.
Just kind of sit down and hammer out with them, hey, here's what we're looking for. Do you have an idea of anything else where you could be involved in? And then it can be a process that everybody can help fill up to make it in the future easier.
That's a great point. To ask these people on these committees what could have been done differently.
And all of them should be in a room together.
Well, each one's a little bit different because they got a different topic. But, we can take ones that go development or whatever. I can't remember.
They have a different perception of where the process is. I mean, this process has been in play already for a couple of years.
Yes.
It's almost as if we're coming in and saying, okay, let's back up 2 years because now the public wants to be involved. They had the opportunity to be involved. They could have gone to every planning commission meeting while those topics were being discussed, and they could have made their point of view.
So why have the committees in?
Because people are
people
saying,
ask for hey, it, and we ask for them to be made.
That's right. Right.
I'm sorry.
But that's not the issue.
To answer your question, the people came out and they talked about wanting to be involved, and we as a board had 3 people say, then we're going to make committees for this to get involved. Mm-hmm. And that's how fast it got dropped on them. Yes, we probably should have been able to write something up and make it a lot more clarity.
Right.
But people have to know it's just like a vote we take here, this advisory board. We want to hear what everybody's got to say, and sometimes you're saying something and I go, dang, God, that's a good idea. Okay? But if your idea is not accepted, then okay, it's not accepted. Let's move on with what we got.
Yeah, I've worked on planning for 20 years, and it's never easy. We spend a couple of years between the planning commission and the planning department trying to get this put together.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have different views. Some people want only green space. Some people homes for everybody, and it's very difficult to please everyone.
But they're not complaining, the ones that I'm hearing from. I think that's what Mazzell keeps saying. Is that they're not talking about anything regarding the planning process or any of that at all. Mm-hmm. It could be about whether you're going to change light bulbs.
Right.
Again, I'll just keep using this.
All right. All right, guys.
But, hold on. If everybody's going to keep talking about it, then I've got to make it clear that we're missing it, and the citizens are frustrated. I think organizationally, our approach to it needs to be different. As long as that's where we're at, I'm okay. If it's not where we're at, then as a director of the organization, I'm concerned and frustrated. I can leave that.
And I think the biggest frustration that staff and everyone else has, planning commission, I'm sure probably as it is, mm-hmm. we threw this on them 2 months ago instead of 2 years ago.
And on
the planning commission. On the planning staff.
And the staff. When we handed them an advisory board, and they've already, like Ms. Eager has said several times, they've been in the process for 2 years. And I forgot you've been on the planning commission forever.
Yeah, 12 years before the
board.
Yes, ma'am. You're right. We need to have a more laid out structured plan of just being able to say A, B, C, D. Boom. This is what we're looking for. And I totally agree with that. I also see where they might be frustrated that we've been in this process for 2.5 years or 2 years, and all of a sudden, the last 3 months or 6 months, you're going to say, okay, now we're going to throw a monkey wrench in.
I've got a suggestion for item number one, is that they should all be FLDP members. That's my suggestion for item number one.
No, then some of us have to leave the board.
No, I'm just saying, as an advisory committee, if you're coming in and you want to be educated and you haven't gone through the FLDP class, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
I would not agree with that.
But I'm just saying, that's...
There are people who say that FLDP has a slant.
All right.
And so you wouldn't want to get into
Everything has a slant. The people who are coming to the committees have a slant.
Yeah. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Anything else need to be brought up, Mr. Dahl?
I just have two. I promise you, they're really quick.
Mel said that too.
No, I know. Yes, I know, and it went sideways. So, two other things. One, so between the JRWA, we want to try and get two board members as volunteers, because we'd like to have a meeting with two of Louise's board members to kind of just discuss JRWA topics and just make sure we're all on the same page and in the near future. So I'd certainly coordinate with board members on times and make sure everyone can attend. So I'm just looking for two volunteers for that.
I'll do that.
Okay.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
Do you have one more thing?
I do one more thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I just have one little comment.
And then the next one.
Yeah.
It's not true. Well.
All right.
Yeah, and then the next one is we're going to have a meeting with some of the fire chiefs here coming up, just kind of talk some EMS ordinance stuff, and wanted to see if there's two board members that would participate in that meeting as well between kind of county staff and some of the chiefs.
I'm on, not technically on, but they asked me to start joining their meetings, so I'd certainly like to participate in that.
I'll do it if nobody else.
I mean, I'll do it, but you have the most experience as far as... But maybe that puts you in a bad position. So
that's one thing I'm hesitant about is I don't want to do it because I'm on the other side.
Yeah, then I'll do it. That's fine.
Tony. Unless, who's doing it?
Tony and Chris. Unless one of y'all.
No, I'm not.
Mark this on the calendar. This is the first time we've ever done something like that. Ms. Booker and said, "Put me there."
I have one thing to say. We had a very successful small business fair Saturday. I didn't see any of you all. I saw Jennifer and Moselle Booker.
What time was
it? It started, I had to be there at 7. They set up at the high school on Friday night. And then Saturday, I got there at 7:30. We had 44 vendors come in. Small business things that I've never seen. These people are in this county. We had three food trucks outside. and they did a very good business. We helped people bring in their ware. They got people to come by their booths, and they saw what we have in this county. Some of them present on the second Sunday art market. We have some creative, intelligent, and good businesses in this county. And it was good to see them under one roof.
How would I have known about it? Do you know? Because I just heard about
it. It was advertised up to Gingham Christmas.
I was running my small business.
Yeah, okay, that's right. I'm not asking anybody for any excuses.
I didn't know about it. And I have a small business.
Daniel.
Yes. It went out to, you should have been.
I heard about it. It was emails
the
came out.
Economic Development, EdTech, the NACP was just there to kind of help. We didn't give any money.
I will say that it was, some people got notice just before it was happening too. So it was not, it could have been advertised.
Jennifer could fill in, but the advertisement was galore. You can't tell me that 48 people came in there and you didn't hear about it. I don't believe you.
Is it? Well, I didn't hear about it. So
you're laughing at y'all.
Well, I got it,
the right spot.
I didn't hear
y'all are not in the right spot.
I think I have about 100 unanswered emails.
That's all I have to say.
One of the vendors told me today that she was asked last minute to participate. One of the people.
Well,
who,
I mean,
one
you
of the
told the Rat of Morgan that she would be ready to give because she is at organized, plus she has flyers from gang gangs up the hill and ground. She's almost sent an airplane over to Adams. But
I'm
anyway,
sorry, I missed it.
I'm sorry you missed it too. But I thought I'd bust
them. All right. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.